Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we're also rebroadcast Sundays at 3 p.m. on atozen.fm. So again, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com and replayed Sunday, 3 p.m. on atozen.fm. Or you can go ahead and grab the archive and listen to it anytime you'd like. 3 a.m. if you'd like. Whatever floats your boat, as they say. Well, it's a beautiful Saturday afternoon here on the Central Coast, a little on the warm side, at least for my taste. But, hey, it's beautiful if you can get out to the beach or to the pool or some kind of puddle you can play in. If it's warm where you are, splash around a little bit like a kid. Have some fun and enjoy yourself. Because on this program, we're going to be talking about education. And in a manner of speaking, it's sort of a bugaboo with me only because I have to look that word up, bugaboo. I looked up the word education, as a matter of fact, because I thought it would be appropriate for our conversation today. It happens to be the act or process of imparting or acquiring general knowledge, developing the powers of reasoning and judgment, and generally of preparing oneself for other intellectuals for mature life. Okay, I don't think they have the right tense of that word in there. In any event, you get the gist of it. It's also the act or process of imparting or acquiring particular knowledge or skills. As for a professor, it's also referring to a degree, level, or kind of schooling, a university education, and also it is the result of a result produced by instruction, training, or study to show one's education, the science or art of teaching. They also refer to it as pedagogics. That is the word. P-E-D-A-G-O-G-I-C-S. Pedagogics. Well, that ties into what we're going to talk about because of our guest today, who happens to be an educator. She's an author, an educator, a lecturer. She's uncovered 33 codes that reveal the new energy patterns or codes living within all children today. That kind of raises one of my first questions. There are new portals in need of being opened, activated, and protected to bring out the full potential within each gifted and yet very sensitive children who are the future teachers of a new way of being. My guest is the author of the book, The New Choreography of Consciousness. It is new evolutionary movements creating a quantum leap, attaining our higher human potential. Jean A. Schweitzer, Ph.D., thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you here.
Yes, thank you, Richard, for having me. It's a delight.
You have been educating for how long?
Oh, I hate to tell you. It's over 60 years.
Okay. So this is
a long time.
All right.
I started very young. Put it that way.
All right. Well, now, as I mentioned, as I was reading some of the information from your brochure here, which is Heart Emotions, Children Decoding Creation with Love, Laughter, and Joy, the one thing that came to mind was the fact that you found 33 codes within children today. What happened to the adults?
Well, I think, of course, we all have them. We all have the creative forces within us. By code, I just mean the way the laws of energy move in us.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened is that there is a whole batch that of adults who are now adults who also began having this, what I call a new imprint or a new blueprint, because the energy flow is different. The flow of energy itself, the energy doesn't change, but the direction of energy changes, which makes it either more available to us or less available, according to how we're becoming aware of it.
How did you...
How
did you find and define these 33 codes? How did you know that they were even there?
Well, that's an interesting story. First of all, my background training was in 11 years of working with vibrations and movement and sound and music and sound. And what that meant was looking at the archetypal movements that occur every time we speak. Every sound of the alphabet has its own gesture and movement. Every tone in music has its own gesture. Today we speak of them as frequencies, mm-hmm. right? We know that everything consists of frequencies. And when you move these frequencies with the body, then you experience energy directly. So my background training was in that, and I had been teaching for at least 15 years before I noticed, and it happened when I returned from England in 1977. I had just returned from England where I was working with delinquent children who were straight off the streets of London. And at that time, when I came back to the States, it just sort of stood right up in front of me of how different the children were then as compared to when I left America. So I began to record the fact of that what I had been trained in and what I learned would work in a certain way, you know, like you do certain movement exercises to focus, to create concentration, to work on the liver or the kidneys if you're working with illness. And all of it wasn't working. So I had to chart what was working. And the most information that I got was at working with autistic children. And I began to realize there was a whole new blueprint, almost, of how energy was working within the children. And it really doesn't matter whether, you know, you give them a label of ADD or autistic, as we call it today, or whatever label we have, and we have a lot of them, because all children are born whole, and we're all born whole. We just, obstacles come in the way, the immune system is compromised, the lifestyles change, and these obstacles cause problems. So I began to ask a lot of questions about what is really changing here. And in meditation, I received a whole package of information, and this package consisted of all the movements, these 33 movements, and for a long time I didn't understand them. I didn't have a clue as to what they meant, what they were there for, and it took me almost 34 years of working with them and with thousands of children to really understand that this is how they learn now. This is a new patterning within them.
Now, does this coincide with any of the new technologies, or is this somewhat independent thereof?
No, it absolutely coincides. I mean, people like Bruce Lipton and Greg, these people, Greg Braden.
Braden Braden, huh?
These people, yeah, they are forerunners of this. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they were at a time when this was just coming in, and they've uncovered, actually, the concepts that for a long time I was looking for. I had the movements, the sounds. I had the vibrational. See, vibration works in couples. They work as pairs. You never have one vibration by itself. It's always in relationship to its opposite, its polarity. So I had all of these, but I didn't yet quite get the picture that the entire universe is doing this until I, you know, realized that, well, this is happening not only on a human level, but this is happening in the cosmos. This is happening on an earth next level. And what is happening is that we're shifting consciousness. We're shifting from a separation consciousness into a unity consciousness.
I think that that is apparent. That is apparent if your eyes are open to seeing that. But a lot of folks,
yes,
I would venture, are a little bewildered by what they perceive as what seems like the lowering of the consciousness on the planet because of so many of the silly things that are going on, some of the brutal things that are going on, which we won't go into, but that we know are there. And there are those of us who are sitting here saying, enough already. We've already done this, and we all know how this is going to turn out. So stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there are people such as yourself, and as you mentioned, Lipton and Braden and so forth, who are
yeah,
forerunners. I'm curious as to how the group of children that have received the label the Indigo Children plays into this.
Well, see, they were also noticed by psychiatrists and professionals. And when I first noticed them, there was nothing written yet about them. But then very soon, all the professionals working with children began to notice also. And then there was a lot of research done by Cook Reuter, and she actually identified the different aspects of consciousness that now exist in the children, because she worked with the children herself, and she did it directly with them. This is why I admire her work so much.
Yeah.
But it began to appear, and the Indigos were just a name. It's like we have brunettes and blondes and redheads,
mm-hmm,
right?
Or Generation X and Y and so forth.
Right. And so the Indigos what we call now the Crystal Children, the Magenta Children, the Crystal Children, the Rainbow Children, there's actually 144 different varieties. But again, we love labels, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like to label, but I use the word only to show that they weren't the ordinary. They are a new consciousness.
Okay.
They actually have a new patterning, and it's all about patterning that creates it. See, the polarities are joined, like the heart and the mind is joined.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think separately like we do. We're still teaching left brain, right brain, but we know we have a whole brain.
Yeah.
And we know that we need to do that, but we don't do it.
Right,
we're still behind.
Well, we're going to talk more about that as we continue. I want to let our listeners know that following the radio broadcast, there's going to be what I have referred to as the after view, where Gene and I are going to chat a little bit longer, and you'll only be able to hear that after view in the archive. And when you go to the archive, you'll listen to that interview throughout, and you'll hear everything that you've heard on the radio program, but you'll hear an extra 8 to 10 minutes or so of, again, the after view, and it's the only way that you'll be able to hear it. We won't have it at atozen.fm, but we will have it available to you. And it's an opportunity for you to get more information. We also encourage you to get even more information by going to her website, which is that's Ice Cream Edward or Ice Cream Education, vibrations.com. That's IEvibrations.com. You can also contact her directly by phone using the old-fashioned way of dialing 561-733-0522, 561-733-0522. Now, you have this new book that is called The New Choreography of Consciousness, and one would not necessarily pick this up and automatically assume, oh, this has to do with education, but it's something deeper than that. Let's talk about that.
Okay. It has to do with the fact that we are created, right? We are created out of an infinity of harmony, of beauty, of balance. I mean, we have never exhausted our research into how this whole being, this planet, our beings, the earth, the trees, the animals came into being. We're always in search of answers because they're endless. And we come from this. And we are an extension of it. So we are created to create. The problem is, how do you grasp it? How do you get a hold of it? How do you take it and actually use it and manifest it? For example, how do you learn by it? You know, so this is what this book is about, how you learn by it. And there is an order, and there is a sequence as to how learning is now taking place. And when you follow it, the children, for example, who we call autistic, the veil lifts, and it's amazing. I get children sometimes within 5 minutes to speak where they've never spoken before. And it's only because when they move according to the laws of creation, they feel it. And if they feel it, they can begin to express it.
Now, I have very little experience with or exposure to autistic children, but what little I do know from some of the news programs and documentaries I've seen, my observation is they're fine. There's nothing, there's absolutely nothing wrong with them in any way, shape, or form. No. They are on what I'll call a different frequency or bandwidth than the rest of us.
Exactly.
They're more highly tuned.
And when you do the movements, if they have blockage in speaking, which some of them do, see, that's why they get that label, is because they'll hold speech back maybe for a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
I think probably
in
our...
And the reason they do...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
...is because their immune systems have been compromised, you know?
Uh-huh.
With overstimulation is one biggie, bad food... The lifestyles of the mother during pregnancy, a lot of things come into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one thing.
Right.
But wherever there is blockage, you're going to see something not functioning. So what this does, because it's movement and it's thought, I mean, the thought and the movement are connected. It's like a moving meditation. So when they say, I go into my heart, I open my heart. Even though they can't speak, they feel it. And very soon they're speaking. And in full sentences.
I
very seldom have them just do single words.
Exactly. I think that probably the most notable in our time right now autistic person is, of course, Temple Grandin, who the documentary was made of. And I thought, okay, she functions a little differently than the people that she's surrounded by, as the movie showed, but it's like she seems to have a greater grasp of, shall we say, the correct way of doing things in that particular field than even the people who have been doing it for 15, 20, 30, 40 years. And I'm just thinking, of course, they're not going to listen to her because she doesn't have the credentials, the reputation, the history, and so forth. Well, we're going to continue talking more here about this as we are talking with Gene Schweitzer. By the way, is there any relation to Albert?
Yes.
Okay, let's save that.
He's
let's
in
save
the
that.
Family.
Okay, let's save that for when we come
I
back.
I am Swiss.
Absolutely. Well, the new Choreography of Consciousness is the title of the book, and my guest is Gene Schweitzer, and we will talk more about her connection to Albert Schweitzer as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And a reminder about the afterview here on the program. You'll be able to hear it on the archives. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Professional glassblower and craftsman Saul Alcaraz of Santa Barbara Art Glass can design and create a custom piece for you, your home, or your business. And here's all you need to do.
All I need to know is the colors of your house. I'll take it from there. I can make your salad bowl, your plates, your drinking glasses, your wine glasses, your pitcher, cups, and a chandelier to finish it up. And they will look really beautiful on your table. And obviously, we gotta have the right sizes. send me the metalwork, the hardware, where it's going to sit. I mean, I have dedicated thousands and thousands of hours. I've been playing with the glass for 21 years. I specialize in antiques. That's my forte.
Can people come by the shop unexpected?
I like it when they come in unexpected, and they'll probably bring some good energy in. Our studio, it's at 706 East Mason Street, two blocks from Miopas in Santa Barbara.
How do people get a hold of you?
Check out my website, sbrglass.com, or call us at 805-965-1541.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we will return to our special interview with our in-studio, or actually on the phone, choreographer, if you will, Gene Schweitzer, and talk more about education and where we're going in the 21st century, heading 2 years into the second decade. It's amazing stuff. Right now, we're heading into a new sign here shortly, but Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, which is quite a mouthful, I must say, is here to talk to us, of course, about, we were talking Leo, I think it was, but I brought up the subject of Mars last week, especially because of the rover, or whatever, I don't know if it was a Taurus or a Taurig landing on Mars, to check out the place and see if there's enough parking space for us. But let's find out a little bit more about how you see Mars in this relationship. I mean, we're really focused on it. I mean, for a long time, it was the moon. And I don't even know what role the moon plays as far as astrology is concerned, or I do know astronomy, but astrology. I'm curious as to the role Mars plays in this whole gambit.
Well, that was an excellent question, and I love it when you give me these kinds of little assignments where I can go play in the books and research a bunch of stuff and get back to you on it. In astrology, the ancients ascribed to the planet Mars the male archetype, the divine sacred male energy. And the primary reason for that was because Mars was so bold and so bright and so erratic in its orbit. It was more elliptical than circular. Now we know that most of the planets are, but Mars is more so than most. And because of that energy, Mars was said to be the pioneer, the innovator, the strong one, the person who kind of boldly goes where nobody else can go. And so when there's a lot of emphasis on Mars, there's a lot of that energy to be harnessed. It's a good time to be trying new things and doing new things. And in the last, how this plays out for space exploration, I think, has to do with the transit of the planet Uranus, which rules technology and space exploration, which moved a couple of years ago into the sign of Aries, which is ruled by Mars. And so a lot of astrologers call this a time of revolution, a mm-hmm. revolution of consciousness, revolutions in science, revolution in our awareness, and our ability to kind of harness our technology to serve higher consciousness.
Hmm. You know, a thought occurred to me that we'd do a whole lot better to be doing this on television, because to be able to describe the movement of the astrological signs as far as where the planets are at a given point in time and so on and so forth, kind of hard on radio, but it reminds me of course, also the multiple rings of the Mayan calendar. I mean,
right.
You know, each ring moves at a different rate and so on and so forth. So it's hard to convey that a lot of times, but nonetheless, your point is that we are in that phase. And it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong here, is it that we're heading into a new technological, not updating process? We've had enough with the updates, but innovation. In other words, we're actually going to be doing some absolutely new things, even if it means sending a man and or woman to Mars or another probe out to Uranus or some of the other planets in our solar system, or even just checking out some of the space between therein.
Not only that, but I think it'll be easier to do this sort of thing now. There will be fewer failures. You know, how many times did we send something to Mars before it actually worked and started sending back information?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the discoveries we make will grow in leaps and bounds because we will have more success in our efforts.
And there are more people doing it, or I should say more countries, because my understanding is that China has its own space program it's working on. Of course, some of the countries in the former Soviet Union, I don't even know what to call it anymore, are still involved in some level, because that's one of the ways now, that the only way, I guess, that we can get to the space station is using the Soviets' rocketry. And India, I believe, is also in the process of starting, if they haven't already, their own space program, and other countries as well.
And that's what's so fascinating about this time, this Uranus in Aries that's been going on for about 2 years. It'll go on for about three more. All these different nations now of our global village have their own programs, and with a different priority. Mm. Some of them are more towards the moon and space stations, and we're really interested right now in Mars. We've pretty much curtailed everything else that we know of, or that's public knowledge, and we've really shifted our emphasis.
Yeah.
And, you know, by doing this, we can cover more ground if everybody's working on a different, slightly different priority, different area.
And it sounds to me like there isn't going to be another Neil Armstrong, because we have so many other people working on it, and it's less important who gets there first as much as is the goal of just getting there.
Well, this is where I'm out of my realm. I'm not part of NASA.
I understand.
They deem to be important.
But the paradigms that are shifting here on this planet are shifting in a way. I'd heard it said that during the NASA days, they weren't going to reveal a lot of the information as far as what they found. I mean, they revealed a lot. Whereas I've heard that China, as they begin their exploration, a matter of fact, I believe they're even thinking of going back to the moon, they're going to tell everybody everything, which I think is freaking out this government, because apparently there's some stuff that they don't want us to know about. And I'm thinking, well, maybe this is part of the process of first contact. I mean, legitimate, publicized first contact with, you know, other life in the universe.
That could be. That could be. You know,
anyway, that's kind of a side note. We're
deep
also
thoughts there, Richard.
Deep thoughts. We're heading into a new sign here very shortly. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have been exploring the sign of Leo, and coming up on Wednesday, the 22nd of August, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, the sun moves from Leo into Virgo, according to the Western astrology, and it will be there for a month until the fall equinox on September 22nd, when it moves into the sign of Libra.
Okay.
So starting next week, we'll be exploring a whole new sign, the sign of Virgo, and so be thinking about that. If you have some specific questions, if there's any kind of aspect of Virgo you want to cover, you just let me know and we'll rock and roll.
And a real quick acknowledgement to my father, who just celebrated his 81st birthday on Monday the 13th.
Aww.
And very happy that he is still with us and still alive and kicking and doing well and putzing around with his computers and getting viruses and all the fun stuff that that keeps him excited. So I'm very happy to have the opportunity still to connect with him and my mother as well. And as a matter of fact, 56 years married back in June. So quite an accomplishment having put up with six children. So very interesting stuff. BethMcDonaldConsulting.com is the website, and 963-0842 is your phone number if people want to get more information, would like to get a reading on their chart, and as well as maybe ask some further questions that we haven't had a chance to address yet here on this program.
Awesome. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be back in just...
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Rupa Chari bring you this health tip.
Today's Chari Center of Health quick tip is for heart health. One of the risk factors for high blood pressure is excess salt consumption. Sodium attracts and holds water, and your blood volume increases. Increased blood volume makes your heart work harder, since it has to move more blood through your blood vessels, and that increases pressure in your arteries. Consider that just one teaspoon of table salt has 2,325 milligrams of sodium. We get 77% of our sodium from processed and prepared foods. Lots of sodium is found in sodas, alcohol, including beer and wine, deli meats, soups, and most boxed items on grocery shelves, including breads, cereals, and condiments. One tablespoon of soy sauce has about 1,000 milligrams of sodium. Salt is basically a combination of sodium and chloride, used for preservation and enhancing taste. On average, Americans eat about 3,600 milligrams of sodium a day, about double the goal for many people.
So how much sodium do you need? According to the 2005 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, don't exceed 2,300 milligrams of sodium a day if you are a healthy adult. Don't exceed 1,500 milligrams of sodium a day if you have high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney disease, are African American, or are above 50 years old. So what type of salt is good for you? Salt can be found in three forms: unrefined salt, refined salt, and iodized salt. Both refined and iodized salt are not good for your health, since they are heavily processed and treated with various chemicals. So avoid products with more than 200 milligrams of sodium per serving, and buy unrefined sea salt. Limited amounts of sea salt is the best form of salt to use for both cooking and table salt. And finally, check the nutrition facts label of the sodium content on the foods and beverages that you buy.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you, Beth McDonald, for joining us here on the program each week. And we're going to get back to our conversation with the author of The Choreography of Consciousness, Gene Schweitzer. And I can tell our listeners, Gene, that our afterview is going to be very interesting, to say the very least. So we encourage them to go to the website and check that out. Let's talk more about this choreography of consciousness. Now, obviously, the new choreography, obviously, this is referring to movement. I mean, when I think of choreography, I, of course, think of dance. And in a manner of speaking, that's what we're really looking at, is the dance of the human in terms of raising the individual consciousness and, in turn, so doing, raising the consciousness of the planet as a whole. Do you find that there are a lot of people who are, as they become aware of and are introduced to the work that you have done and the book, in this case, the materials and the teaching, that they are skeptical at the very least, or do they just jump on board and say, hey, let's go?
Well, they're usually skeptical until it actually works, and it works very quickly. What the first reaction is always, oh, I feel so good. I feel relaxed. I feel comfortable. I feel as if I'm right with the world again. These are reactions I get almost immediately, especially from the children. Because I've been doing this particular movement approach for a good 60 years. I have a lot of experiential happenings that have happened because of it. But when I introduce the new alignment, I call it the alignment with the universe. How we stay in alignment and be co-creators at the same time. And when I do this with the children, what it happens, and even with adults, is that they start getting very creative, number one, and they start creating these amazing things, because movement is the basis of a holographic world that we live in. It's hollow movement, whole movement, and when you apply whole movement to the mind, to the heart, to the will, you get a super function, number one. I mean, everything is activated and flowing in its natural, organic way. It's not like I made these up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer you a little bit?
It does, yes. I know that there has been discussion time and time again. We as a species do seem to carry out one particular action on a pretty regular basis, and that is that whenever there's a problem, we throw money at it. And of course, mm-hmm. education is no exception. And I have noticed in my short little time on the planet that that hasn't worked, and yet we keep doing it. And
yeah.
I'm sitting here watching the TV, listening to the news, going, stop doing that. Change the curriculum.
Right. Change the curriculum.
It's like I'm watching a sporting event and I'm cheering. Okay, go this way. No, throw the ball that way. Change the change the focus. Let's get back to I want to say the basics.
Right. What happens here, Richard, is that the when you start accessing energy. See, we have portals. That's why I call it impulse. Impulse and telekey.
Mm-hmm.
My DVD is called Heart Motions of Impulse, because these impulses are flowing in and out of us continuously. They are free.
Now, you used the word
free technology.
Right. Well, exactly. You used the word entelekey.
Define entelekey. Okay, entelechy is a Greek word. It comes from Aristotle to mean the fullness of. So the entelechy is our full being, our higher self, our lower self, our past self, our present self, our future self. We have different aspects of the self, and the fullness of it is entelechy. Gene Houston, who's famous speaker in all of these things, talks about the entelechy exercise, where she has you actually put your hands up and feel your own presence coming into your being. See, all of the impulses that come into us from the universe are translated by us. That's why I call the heart the translation box, or the creation box. This is where we go to change the energy, and according to who we are, where we've been, and what experiences we have, we give it out in a new form, and it's always different. You know, when the sun hits you, I have a different experience than when the sun hits me.
Right.
And yet it's all the sun, right?
Exactly, exactly.
But see, the laws of creation, they don't care. They're just laws. You know, gravity doesn't ask you if you believe in it, if you step off a 30-foot building.
It just is.
It's just going to do its thing.
Exactly.
And that's the way these laws are. They do their thing, but we change them.
Uh-huh.
We're the changer here. And that's why the body's important. And the person is important.
So I don't want to get flippant here, but you're implying then, using gravity as your example, that if we chose to, we could actually float. We could levitate.
Absolutely. See, what's happening right now is the marriage between anti-gravity and gravity. And where they meet is in the heart chamber. you know, between the upper sternum and the lower sternum,
right,
in the still point. And that's what all these movements are about. They direct the energy into the still point. And that's where you change it into who you are, and I change it into who I am, out of my experience.
Tell me about...
See, and that's where we're individual.
Right, right. We each have that our own individual perceptions and vibrations and
right.
so forth. And I found
right.
it fascinating as you were talking earlier in the program about how, of course, the alphabet, our alphabet, of course, each letter has a different numerical and tonal association
frequency.
And so forth. And frequency, thank you. And also, you know, because it makes me think of what I have learned, for example, about the Hebrew language and the alphabet, the 22 characters. But it has a much more extensive legend to it, so that when you start putting the letters together into words and the words together into sentences and so forth, it has incredible energy and power. The only problem is when you translate it into another language, you lose all that.
Yes, but the thing, and that's so important what you're saying. Because what is happening, and what was told to me in the very beginning when I got these new movements, was that the reason they're new is because energy is integrating. The ah and the alphabet is integrating with the A and the E and the so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're as they integrate, you know, this is how we create. It takes a male and a female, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes... the both sides of one polarity to create something new. And this is what's happening now. And the children know how to do this.
They already know.
They already
coming
have
in.
It in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's already there. The blueprint is there. All we have to do is allow it. See, we're not, and because it's money, you spoke of money.
Mm-hmm.
See, they've made education... they've made healing a money issue.
Right.
And it isn't a money issue.
Yeah.
It is an energy issue, and energy is free.
Well,
it's
there
free
would be
technology.
Those there would be those that would want to stop you from providing this free energy.
Absolutely.
And of course the real irony though is that they can't stop you because you have access to it right now. Just as I do
right.
at this very moment from the two
Absolutely.
Different locations where we are. And I have a feeling that there is going to come a day and time when, you know, they can try whatever they want. Nothing's going to work to stop us from expressing that free energy.
Right. And see, I forget what the man's name is that did all the frequency work on that. But when you get... See, it's all about frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And frequency, the lower the frequency, the denser the material.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher the frequency, the lighter, the more clear, the crystal clear it is.
I think
where we are is about 200, right?
Right.
And we need to up it at least to 500 in order to get at least what they say is like 100 million. If 100 million people... we're at that level, we could swing it.
Mm-hmm, right. And I think the person you're thinking of is Tesla.
Yes,
yeah.
Tesla.
Incredible work that he did and so forth. Well, as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, we're talking with Jean Schweitzer. She is the author of The New Choreography of Consciousness, and she has a website. We'll give that one more time to you here. It is ievibrations.com. IE Vibrations, and phone number if you'd like to reach her is 561-733-0522. We are also linked to her website as well, so we encourage you to check out the information that she has available to her. Tell us a little bit about your background. Now, you say you've been teaching for some 60 years or so, but I'm curious as to even before that, in terms of your own upbringing, in terms of your own spiritual growth, coming into this world and growing up in this world with the parents that you had.
I came into a holistic family before there was a term. My mother and father believed that first we are spirit and then we become matter. And that there, for every law in the spiritual sense, there is a physical law and vice versa. So my father grew biodynamic food, we ate holistic, you know, things.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a concept then.
It just
so
was.
I thought everybody was like that.
Yeah.
And now
we're going back to that. It's kind of interesting that more and more people are starting to want to go back to that. And they're giving it
right,
a name.
And I had to learn to go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn to go where they were.
Right.
Because I soon found out I couldn't talk about what I experienced. You know, and mm-hmm. as a very little child, my mother said I would sit and observe and for hours. And, you know, today we think, well, there's something wrong with her. But I was actually, now I get it, that I was sitting in the still point. And in the still point is where creation happens. And then at 12, I was told I would be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. And that's when I began this type of movement with the archetypal sounds at the age of 12. And that saved my life. It literally, I'm still going.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm not in a wheelchair, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually saved my life. So I'm really proof of my work, that it works.
Well, let me ask you to describe the progression, if there even was one. If you started out in this fashion, at least on a physical level, was your spiritual life pretty much from the get-go where it is today?
Oh, no. I was an observer at first,
mm-hmm.
and then I learned how movement, I learned all the aspects of motion, and then I focused on projective geometry and math. And after I had done all of that and taught is when I actually began to realize that I could read energy.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that until that's when these codes came. I didn't know that until I was working with a deaf child. And this child was stone deaf. And they thought that his deafness came from meningitis. And that's what the doctors thought. But when I looked at him, I saw that he couldn't move one side of his mouth. And I asked the mother, did he ever put anything in his mouth? And she said, oh, my goodness, yes. He electrocuted himself at the age of 9 months.
Yikes.
And I said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew what to do with him. So then I knew I had to rebuild the whole nervous system with him, repattern that whole nervous system. And in a very short time, when I first had him, she brought him to me because he couldn't speak. He was 4.5 years old. And it took me 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes, to get 5 clear vowel sounds out of him.
Wow.
Through the vibrations. And so I received a grant to work with him for 1.5 years. And he began to learn rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he took off like you couldn't believe. And they couldn't believe it. And when they tested him, not only did he speak and learn and progress very quickly, but he also began to hear.
And so, what is he doing today?
I wish I knew. You know, I thought of him so many times. He must be 30 or so now, mm-hmm. and in his 30s, maybe
wow.
even going on 40. But he was one of my miracle children. You know, I felt like he taught me so much. And all the children I've worked with have really taught me everything through observation.
So let me ask you a rather pointed question. Who is Jean A. Schweitzer?
I don't know. Still trying to find that one. No.
That's a common question answer that I get.
No, I know who I am. I am. I call myself a searcher. I really search for the keys to what makes human beings human.
Hmm.
That's always been my search. And I love the world. I have had always this great admiration for the beauty of what we have here. You know, the to look at a tree or to watch the animals or to watch the colors in the sky. These things are magnificent, and I've always, you know, known that this is such a gift to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes life worthwhile. Mm. It's really the love that we have for what we've been given.
I also find it interesting that you talk about, and this is in your brochure, this whole process of heart motions, children decoding creation with love, laughter, and joy. And some folks will take this kind of work so seriously that they forget to enjoy themselves.
Right. And if they, you know, my theory about education, I have a very simple theory. It's a jack-in-the-box theory.
Mm.
Like Jack, you jump in the box. See, people are afraid of that box, but we shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
The box is where we contain,
yeah.
is where we create, where we get to know who we are in that box. Then we jump out, and we play, and we laugh, and we explore. And that's as simple as it should be.
Mm. So what is it that you hope to achieve through the work you're doing?
Well, my greatest dream is to contribute to a truly higher education. And by higher, I don't mean, you know, like college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean higher in frequency, higher in love, and higher in the depth of meaning of life, higher in all the things that matter, that make people want to wake up in the morning and see the next day. You know, I would like, my dream is to contribute to that with what I know and what I've experienced.
Well, we are certainly grateful for your taking time to share with us and educate us. I actually warned our listeners in the promo that we ran all week long that you be careful, because by the end of the hour, you may have learned something. And I hope that is the case. Well, the other thing too, I warn the listener as well, that once you've listened to the program, it's too late. You can't unhear it. Now you're going to have to do something with that information that you've taken in. And that is also why I find it very important that we be very careful about the kinds of information that we take in, the kinds of surroundings, environment that we surround ourselves with, because that has an impact on us on so many different levels. And in this program, I am so grateful that we surrounded ourselves with what you've had to offer to us with the 33 different codes and the new choreography of consciousness, new evolutionary movement, creating a quantum leap, attaining our highest human potential. Gene Schweitzer, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program.
And thank you very much, Richard. I've enjoyed being here.
You're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We do stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And we rebroadcast this program at a2zen.fm, 3 p.m. Sundays. And this program does have an afterview. So if you're leaving us at this particular point in the program, we thank you for joining us. And if you can hang around and continue to listen to the archive, we certainly hope that you will do that. I think it's going to be fascinating listening for you as well as for me. I've had a great time and a great education today. Until next week, love to Lal. And we're going to continue talking here in our afterview with Gene Schweitzer. And Gene, we mentioned during the program about a connection to Albert Schweitzer, correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how that, I'm curious, do you find that there is something genetically connecting you in that regard that has maybe helped you, that has moved you forward, especially in the area of education?
Yes, absolutely. My connection, and, you know, the thing about working with energy is that you can't always prove it. But my connection is an energy connection, and I remember having in my past life of having been with him.
Hmm.
And when I was born, I came in very strongly with the promise to work with the children because I was sent to a sanitarium. I had malaria. And I was sent to a sanitarium, and I saw how poorly the children were treated.
Hmm.
And this affected me very, very strongly. And I made a promise to my father that I would return and work with the children. So it has affected my life.
Yeah. I
very much.
I guess, obviously, in today's world, you get malaria, you're not going to be sent to a sanitarium. But I guess in that day when you were a child, that's
yes,
just what they did.
Right.
That was the process.
Right.
Tell us,
right,
in this segment, we want to talk a bit about some of the codes. And now you say there are 13, and in this book, I've found 9. So let's go through some of these fairly quickly and give a little description of what they do and also maybe how we can, even as adults, how we can maybe activate them or access them or what have you, to assist us in our, shall we say, educational process, our growing?
Well, the order of the 9 follow the same order as when we get an idea and we put it into an actual thought form that we can use and manifest. We go through 9 stages, 9, I would say 9 systems, through the body. The entire body is involved. And the process begins in the heart center, in the wanting to understand something, the search for something. And so when we go into the heart center, the first movement shows how everybody can just use the movement to help the energies open the heart, which then it naturally flows upward over the brain. And as the energy flows over the brain, the pituitary and pineal glands are activated, and then you bring that energy, it flows back into the heart, and you begin to focus. And that's the next code, or the next movement. So the next step, when we get an idea, first thing we do is scan like a computer. We search all over for the idea that we want. Once we get it, we focus it. So the second code is focusing. The third is we find an expression for it, which the throat is involved. With the focus code, you're utilizing both left and right hemispheres of the brain, and the movement, you know, if I move my right hand, my left brain functions. If I move my left hand, my right brain functions. So when you do like an infinity sign,
mm-hmm,
where you have both hands together, what you're doing is you're bringing both sides of the brain together to work together on this one idea that you want to develop. And you access the midline crossing, which is very important. That midline crossing is where the hemispheres cross. And then it goes into the throat area. And in the throat, we find expression for it. We begin to speak about it. And when you speak, you express your ideas. You know how often when you have an idea and it's just running around in your head and you verbalize it with someone,
mm-hmm,
and then all of a sudden you go, wow, that's what it is, because you see it when you verbalize it, you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into the heart, and you know, and then it follows, it expands. So you expand it, and then the solar plexus, it goes down into the body deeper, and the solar plexus decides what it likes and what it doesn't like. You know how you get that feeling in your gut when something is wrong?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So that's where it hits. It hits the navel, the belly button.
Mm-hmm.
And in that center is where you can actually eliminate what doesn't work for you. And we're doing a lot of that right now. You know, we're getting rid of a lot of old thoughts, a lot of old belief systems that aren't working.
There are some of us that are trying to do that, and it is quite it's quite a challenge because, on the one hand, on a conscious level, we're saying, I want to get rid of this old stuff. But on a deeper, more subconscious level, it's the struggle because I think the subconscious kind of wants to hang on.
Right. And that is a big problem.
Yeah.
And that's the problem we're having in education, that we're not raising the frequency of education to meet the changes in the human beings.
Well, one of the
this is happening to everybody, not just the children.
Well, I even used to, and this was kind of a maybe a petty thing on my part, but I thought it was relevant. When it came to education, people would talk about the three R's. And so I broke it down. I'm going, wait a minute, where are you getting three? Reading, yes. Writing starts with a W. And arithmetic, there is no such word. It's arithmetic. It starts with an A.
Right.
So already you're lying to the children. You're already lying to them. What else are you? And then I start to listen to some of the documentaries on television these days about history and the various events in history. And I'm going, they never told us that about Columbus or, you know, about Napoleon or, you know, whoever the event or character is. And yet that information was there back then. And I often wondered, and I have to go back to a priest who I asked some very pointed questions to about Catholicism and the doctrine and dogma. And I think the same answer applies here in the sense that his response to me was, well, we don't want to upset the sensibilities of the people. And in this case, it's almost as if, well, we don't want to upset people because this is the way that it's always been taught. And yet, as time goes on, we seem to dig deeper into the archaeological records and find different truths than what we were taught. And boy, does that tend to upset the apple cart. And this is just one area of this whole aspect of education. There are things that are being taught in school. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I understand that maybe a boy does need to know how to put a condom on, and children might need at a certain age to know how to handle in an appropriate fashion firearms. But to take up normal academic curricular time, I just think that we're, you know, we're missing it.
Yeah.
We're not. As a matter of fact, I tell people, get rid of the basics. Keep the extracurriculars like music and physical education and so forth, those types of extracurriculars. Because within those, you have to know math. You have to know how to speak and how to write poetry and so forth, especially if you're going to compose music.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth. You have to know rhyme and meter and a quarter time, three-quarter time, et cetera, et cetera. So there's math. So you're going to learn those skills within those things. But what do they cut? They cut the very things that would truly
that we need
right. And on a practical level.
Right. And that's why I'm after this work as movement, because what it does is it helps the children perceive.
Mm-hmm.
And what's missing today? Oh, look at what happened with Katrina.
Yes.
When all those people needed water, and there's a man riding around with a truck full of water, and he doesn't know what to do with it. See, this is our problem in education.
Yeah.
We're not teaching to the perception how to perceive the situation in the moment and act on it with your intuition. This is where the change is coming.
Yeah.
To teach not as information stuffing, but as information getting, creating information, going forward, you know, being a creative being.
But I will
being alive.
Right. I will take you to the next level on that, and then we're going to have to wrap this up. And that would be the question of information, and how do we equate information with the correct information, the truth, true information? You know, those terms in the context of all of this.
Can I answer you now?
You've got about a minute and a half.
A second. Okay, you do it through the body. See, the body is important. And the body, when it moves and it feels the difference between crossing arms, going in, opening out, expanding, alternating. There's all kinds of patterns in all of these codes. And when they feel all those variations, they know what they're feeling. And movement doesn't lie, just like math doesn't lie.
Mm-hmm.
Math is a true science.
Mm-hmm.
Because numbers don't lie.
Right.
Either does movement.
Well, unless, of course, you're using this. I saw the news story on this about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. They were teaching what they were referring to as whole math. Now, this is the way this works. The class sits there. You get a mathematical equation. Let's just say 2 plus 2.
Right.
The answer isn't 4. The answer is what the class decides it is.
Oh, that's, see, I don't go with
that's
that.
How far afield I've seen it go.
No, that's no good. I developed a circle math out of all of these codes.
Right.
I was asked to help children who are having trouble with their math.
Mm-hmm.
I developed a circle math where they can add, subtract, divide, and multiply in a circle.
Right.
So they have a visual format, and they can do it with any number combination.
Mm-hmm.
And get the rhythms, get the patterns. And what happens is they see new ones.
Right.
I taught it in 146 schools along the coast of Palm Beach County.
Right.
And almost all the classes tripled their math.
Wow. Jean, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on this After View, the new chronicle, the new choreography of consciousness is the title of the book. And my guest here on Tell Me Your Story has been Jean Schweitzer, PhD, and we encourage you to go to her website and check out more information.